All right, as we know, it's the 25th year anniversary of the Braves winning that title. This guy, unfortunately, was on the other end. He was the manager of the Indians in 95, and he joins us now on the Loud Security Systems newsmaker line. Mike Hargrove here on the Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM. Mike, how you been?
Good, I think. About as good as you can be in this mess, huh?
Yeah, well, listen, everybody hopefully is staying safe in the Hargrove family, and we appreciate you coming on with us.
You bet, no problem.
Hey, Mike, when it ended, did you have hobbies? Are you a golfer? Are you a fisher? Did you, like, think about that stuff when you said, okay, I'm going to sort of go away now?
I've always enjoyed playing golf a lot. I hadn't played here. You know, I had Achilles surgery back in January, so I haven't played much since then. But, I played quite a bit of golf.
What's it
I'm
like?
I'm not very good at it, but I enjoy it.
What's it like the first spring training that you're actually not doing spring training?
Kind of nice. To tell you the truth, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of nice, kind of relaxing. And I took about probably, I would say, two or three years before Mark Shapiro approached me about coming on as a consultant, and then I started going back to spring training. Then with him. I'd spend, you know, 2-3 weeks of spring training on the field, and that was enjoyable. But yeah, when I got to the end of it, I'd really had my fill of the schedules and the weird hours and everything that goes with it. It's a great life, don't get me wrong, but I just, you know, I get tired of that rat race for a while, and that's kind of where I was at, and I was able to recharge my batteries, but I didn't miss not going to spring training now.
Mike Hargrove is with us, an advisor, as you said, with the Indians right now. We'll talk about the 95 World Series in just a second. But ironically, you're also involved in that 10-cent beer night in Cleveland in 1974. You're playing left field for the Texas Rangers. That's your rookie season. I don't know how much about that situation you've talked about over the years. When did you first get an inkling of something going on in the stands and maybe something could be happening on the field in the not-too-distant future?
Well, I hate to correct you, but I was playing first base.
Well, you were playing first. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. I don't know. We knew that it was 10-cent beer night, and there were a lot of people in the stands. And in the first, if memory serves me correct, you know, that was a long time ago. People jumping out of the stands in the right field corner and running across the field in between innings to the left field corner and jumping back up in the stands and the security guards that were there at the time were, you know, just couldn't keep up with them, you know, and it just got more and more each inning. I had things thrown at you from the stands, hot dogs. I had a gallon jug, an empty jug of Thunderbird wine thrown at me from the stands, hit about 10 foot behind me. And that was a little spooky, but it didn't all just happen at once. It just kind of built and built and built, and then boom, here it went.
And Mike, who's the first?
Back in the old days when you could have bottles thrown at you?
Well, think
stadiums.
About this: the 10-cent beer wasn't enough for somebody. They brought a bottle of Thunderbird with them as well.
I know it.
Mike,
hardcore.
Who was the first guy that actually said you might be a manager material guy?
I would have to say. Hal Keller, who used to be he was a farm director in Texas when I was drafted, and then ended up, I think his last job was a general manager of the Mariners, and him and Dan O'Brien, who was the president of the Indians at the time. Those two were the first two that mentioned it.
And I remember you take the job in 91, you replace John McNamara, and I'll never forget that press conference in the old Cleveland Stadium. I've talked with John Hart about this. Hank Peters is up there lecturing everybody saying, you don't understand. We're on the verge of doing something special here. We haven't seen that or didn't see it at the time in Cleveland, and everybody was kind of saying, we've heard this tale before, but lo and behold, talk about 94 and then into 95. We know David Justice said what he said about the crowds up there. If you weren't there to experience it, it really was a phenomenon.
Well, it really, really was. I think that it had a lot to do with the crowds and the energy that they had a lot to do with us being able to do what we did. But Cleveland was, you know, it was, you played in that old ballpark that I think that the seating capacity was 70 plus thousand. And, and 5,000 people would show up for the game. It'd be noisy, but there wasn't a whole lot of energy. But when we went into the new ballpark in 94, I think that people play better when they feel better about where they work and who they were, you know, what they're doing. And moving into to Jacobs Field was like taking a cold shower and getting a fresh start. It just was a big jump for us.
Mike Hargrove is with us. So you get ready to face, after mowing down everybody in the playoffs, you get through Boston, Seattle, and there you are facing the Braves. What's the scouting report going in, the mindset going in to face one of the greatest pitching staffs of all time?
Well, that's exactly what it was. Atlanta had a great starting rotation and an entire pitching staff. But, good gosh, I have three or four of them in the Hall of Fame now. The big thing about the Braves pitching staff, and Leo Mazzoni is a friend of mine, is that, you know, they threw strike one. You know, their first pitch was a strike, and so they were ahead in the count from the get-go. But they never pitched to the plate. The catcher at that time, you know, there was Questech wasn't around, and the umpires weren't under a lot of scrutiny as they are now, getting graded by this Questech stuff. Where the catcher set up, you know, if he set up off the plate 3-4 inches, 5 inches, and the pitcher hit the target, and the catcher didn't have to move his glove a whole lot, then more than likely, and usually it was called a strike. And the Braves could do that consistently. I mean, their pitchers had that sort of command with their pitches, besides having good stuff. Their strike zone was a little wider than normal. But you know, everybody knew that. We dealt with it. And I'm not offering that as an excuse at all. Believe me. The strength, obviously, of the Braves for years was their pitching staff, the catcher set up. They hit the glove, and when they hit the glove, it was called a strike, and we knew that. And everybody knew that. So we try to adjust. And they weren't getting pitches a foot off the plate, but they were getting borderline pitches a little bit off the plate, which every pitcher in baseball strives to do. They just did it a lot more consistently than anybody else.
Yeah, Mike, they actually – and look, it's the idea that Wade Boggs and Tony Gwynn could take a pitch, spit on it, and it's going to be called a ball, because whether it's reputation and fair or unfair, whatever, that just sort of happens.
Sure.
But they showed those games 6 nights in a row here in Atlanta, and there was a moment when Jim Thome got hacked off. And then there was a moment when Jim Thome, according to David Justice, Ryan Klesko, and Tom Glavine, you know, we think the bat flip is a new thing. Klesko flipped you a couple of times, and Thome,
yep,
they said there was one that ended up almost going into their dugout. So this is not a brand new phenomenon.
Yeah, no, it's not a brand new phenomenon. It certainly wasn't done. I think all of us were surprised and shocked when we first saw it. But Jimmy, the home run he flipped the bat on, he hit that ball a long, long way. And I think if I would have been able to hit a ball that far or had hit that ball that far, I would have flipped the bat too.
Justice said Hershiser was chirping during that series. Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that. You know, I really don't. There was kind of a war of words in the papers, and I think some of the things that my players said came off as arrogant or abrasive, and I don't think they were meant that way. It wasn't a big deal, but there were times that people got went over the edge a little bit, I've never liked that, you know, by either side, but I think there were some things said by both sides in the papers that weren't misrepresented, but they were misunderstood.
But again, you're talking about the eclectic bunch you had there in the clubhouse. You got a competitive bunch here. Everything is at stake. So every once in a while, emotions are going to spill over. It's understandable.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's on edge. You know, I mean, that was the ultimate place to be in baseball. And everything's heightened. It was not surprising.
You know, it's interesting, too, because 91 was sort of your version of 95 here in town, when the Braves go from worst to first. And they acquired a couple of veterans in Bream and Terry Pendleton, obviously. Well, you guys go get Eddie Murray and Hershiser. And it really is interesting that you can have a bunch of young talent, but most guys in baseball will tell you, I need something else here. I need a guy who's been around, two guys who've been around.
Dennis Martinez
right.
as well.
And it is interesting that there have been moments in history where you look and you go, young guys were good, but we needed the older guys to be sprinkled in as well.
Well, that's true. You know, that was kind of our plan all along, is to build a core of players that we could, you know, build around. And we had done that, and we had stated from early on that we weren't going to go out and sign any big-time free agents or make, you know, trade for a big-time veteran player until we felt like, you know, that we were there and could get us over the top. And that's what we did when we signed Eddie Murray and Martinez. And then Hershiser, a little bit later. You know, it seemed to work. You know, you need to learn how to win. You know, it doesn't just come naturally. You need to learn how to win. And over the course of a 162-game schedule, you need to learn how to win, you know, every night and be consistent, show up every night. And Eddie and Dennis and Oral were able to kind of guide the players, you know, through that and teach them, you know, this is the way you have to do it to be successful every night or most every night and end up ultimately in the World Series. And our guys did that. They did a very good job of that.
Mike Hargrove is with us, the manager, obviously, of that 95 Indians team that took on the Braves in the World Series 25 years ago. And I know you've answered this question a time or 3,000, but hindsight's always 20/20. If you had to do it all over again, does Jim Poole come to bat in that sixth inning?
You know, I've thought about that a lot. And, you know, David Justice was leading the next inning off, and you know, Poole was a left-handed pitcher, and all he had to do was lay down a bunt. You know, and we'd worked on that throughout the season. And so I felt comfortable doing that. The way it turned out, if I could do it over again, yeah, I would do it over again because of the way it turned out. But you know, had worked and got him down, then I felt like we were better situated to go on and maybe win that ball game. So it's kind of 50-50. I think it's one of those things that the, you know, the writers and sportscasters and everything, it's a point that you can be criticized on, but there's, you know, I mean, you make 100, 150 decisions per night, per game, and all of them are open for second guessing. So if I had to do it over again the way it turned out, yeah, I probably would. But at the time, I felt like it was the right move.
Yeah, Mike, the guy on the winning side has never had to answer any of those questions, because all he did was win. So one guy's going to take it in the shorts a little bit. Look, it was a real thing. I remember watching the game. It was in the building, and you go, okay, that was kind of interesting that became the matchup, and Justice was just the better guy, which, by the way, also happens in this game. It doesn't – look, was it a good decision, bad decision? As you just said, I know the outcome. But every once in a while, the guy 60 feet, 6 inches away from the pitcher is better than the guy on the mound in that given moment.
Yeah, in that moment he was. Yeah. You know, David hit the home run in the game for him, and Jimmy Poole had been very good for us all year long, and so I had a lot of confidence in Jim, you know, pitching against left-hand hitter, and I felt like it was a good matchup.
Mike, we've always loved having you on because you seem like a guy who's very comfortable with himself. Your career, better than maybe people know. Your managerial career was a couple of stops after that, but certainly you look back on it and you go, well, that guy was at the ship of this Cleveland team. But it is interesting when you don't end up with the World Series ring. I don't know what you thought in 95. Hey, we're good enough to get back, and you were good enough to get back. Can I ask, this many years looking back, not that it dictates who you are, and I'm not saying you're losing sleep, but what is the difference you believe in not getting one as compared to the guys who go to bed with one?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. I don't know that I've ever explored the answer to that. The difference... Golly, you know, it's. I think that the biggest difference, because both teams in World Series are good. They're good enough to get, you know, they're good enough to get to the World Series, and they're the best in their league has to represent them. I think that there are breaks along the way that you get a bad hop here or a call strike there, or, you know, a great play, great defensive play, a catch. You know, a ball hits the top of the wall and stays in instead of going out to a home run. I think that you get those breaks. But the big key in when you get those breaks is you take advantage of them. And I think that the winners in situations like that are the teams that, that get the break, and then they take advantage of the breaks. So I know we did that in 97 in the playoffs, especially against Baltimore. You know, we got a number of breaks in that series, the divisional series. I don't know, it was the league championship series. And we took advantage of those breaks, and Baltimore got breaks, and they didn't take advantage of them. And that was the difference if we won. And I think that's probably as much as anything what happened in the 95 series. Atlanta got the breaks, and they were good enough to take advantage of them. When we got breaks, we didn't take advantage nearly enough.
Well, Mike, listen, we appreciate you coming on. As we said to start the conversation, stay safe, and thanks for looking back and discussing some things with us. Hopefully we can talk again.
That sounds good. You guys be good.
Hey, thank you, Michael.
You bet.
Mike Hargrove, Indians manager in 95, joining us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line.